Welcome to this week's edition of the Wallingford and District Talking Newspaper on Wednesday, the 10th of June 2026. The readers this week are Alec, Pat, and Nuala. I'm your producer, Keith, and the copier and distributor is Helen.
Hello, this is Alec. Talks begin over plans for the future of the school site. Promising redevelopment. Councillors and officials are reportedly in talks about a promising redevelopment at a soon-to-be-vacant school site in Wallingford, which is up for sale in September. St Nicholas Church of England School in Wallingford will become vacant at the end of the summer holidays, ahead of the organisation's long-awaited move to a new site. And there's more on the story later.
Hello, this is Pat. US tourist battles blaze at Tesco petrol station, and this article is accompanied by a view through trees to a fire engine among the petrol pumps. A United States tourist helped to battle a fire at an Oxfordshire petrol station midway through his holiday. Darren Fleming, a 61-year-old software engineer from Illinois, was 2 weeks into his trip when the car alongside him at the Abingdon Tesco petrol station off Marcham Road burst into flames. He, his uncle and another pedestrian then fought the blaze, wearing out a number of fire extinguishers as they did so. At around 8:30 on Saturday, May the 30th, Alan Mutton, a 74-year-old from Kennington, Oxfordshire, and his nephew, Mr. Fleming, were looking at a 1979 Pontiac Firebird Trans Am muscle car. "We were admiring it because it is an American car," said Mr. Fleming, "and when the young man driving it started it, it just burst into flames." He added, "Then the person driving it jumped out on fire and ran in front of our car. Ambulances were seen at the petrol station, and the driver, whose identity is unknown, had some burns on his legs," according to Mr. Fleming. "He was taken to the Tesco supermarket for immediate first aid." After the initial shock, Mr. Mutton drove his car, which was next to the Pontiac, away from the fire, and then the duo and a motorcyclist, also at the petrol station, ran to get some extinguishers to battle the flames on the car. Initially, it looked kind of small, isolated round the engine, but it got quite large quite fast, said Mr. Fleming, who added that once he realised the danger, he quit being a tourist and helped out. He said, "We emptied about 8 fire extinguishers onto it." Mr. Mutton, who used to work for a publisher, added it reignited a couple of times, but luckily we got it out, and the Tesco staff were really good organising people and blocking traffic coming into the petrol station. "As you can see, myself, Darren and the other guy had to get pretty close to put the fire out." The Oxfordshire local had been given some small fire training acting as a fire warden when he was a publisher, but said that he and the other two just focused on the job in hand. "We were just intent on doing the job and putting the fire out," he said. "It was just something I did instinct from the past." He added, "I knew I had to get the extinguisher down to the seat of the flame and keep hitting the flame until it was out." Multiple fire crews and police would later turn up at the scene.
Hello, this is Nuala. D-Day tribute takes place at campus. Civic leaders gathered for an annual service to pay tribute to servicemen who took part in the D-Day campaign during the Second World War. On Saturday, the annual D-Day memorial service took place at the Harwell Stone at Harwell Science and Innovation Campus. The stone marks the end of the runway from which soldiers took off from RAF Harwell on the night of June the 5th, 1944, in Horsa gliders towed by aircraft to land in Normandy and capture key installations in advance of the D-Day landings. The gliders were carrying troops from the 6th Airborne Division. The soldiers were among the first British forces to land in Normandy during the main assault for the liberation of Europe. Last year's service included the unveiling of a new sculpture designed by Charlotte Holmes. The artwork is inspired by the curved wooden bulkheads of the Horsa gliders. Made almost entirely of plywood with a canvas skin, each Horsa had a wingspan of 27 metres and length of 20 metres, weighed almost 7 tonnes and carried 28 airborne soldiers. And there's a photograph of here of the D-Day memorial service at Harwell campus, and it shows a lot of very important people standing round a stone, which I'm assuming is the Harwell stone at Harwell Science and Innovation Campus, and very businesslike and smart they look too.
Promising talks held over future use of school land, and this article is accompanied by a very jolly picture of the primary school children with hard hats and yellow vests in front of a digger with their members of staff. Councillors and officials are reportedly in talks about a promising redevelopment of a soon-to-be-vacant school site in Wallingford, which is up for sale from September. St Nicholas Church of England School in Wallingford will become vacant at the end of the summer holidays, ahead of the organisation's long-awaited move to a new site. The school is moving to a brand new purpose-built site on the Highcroft housing development in the town, enabling it to extend the age range of children accepted and grow to become a full primary school for the Wallingford community. The listing for the upcoming sale states, "Importantly, no major redevelopment proposals have been brought forward, leaving the site largely unchanged and offering a rare opportunity for a fresh vision to be realised. There have been some questions over what may happen to this significant 1.9-acre site off St Nicholas Road once the existing school moves out. Now Green County Councillor for Wallingford, James Barlow, has said talks are ongoing about its future. Mr Barlow said the sale of St Nicholas School presents Wallingford with a great community opportunity to make use of this site for the benefit of local residents, as laid out in the Wallingford Neighbourhood Plan. It is a valuable community asset and needs to remain that way rather than becoming more unwanted, unnecessary, unaffordable housing. I've been part of promising conversations about the site with some of the relevant stakeholders, including Oxfordshire County Council, South Oxfordshire District Council, the Church of England, Wallingford Town Council, and a potential social housing provider. St Nicholas School was given planning permission to relocate to Highcroft, a 555-home new development near Wantage Road, in 2023, making the site available for reuse. The Wallingford Neighbourhood Plan, adopted in February 2025, said continued educational and community use would be an option for the site. Alternatively, the part of St Nicholas School site that is already developed could be used for housing, with a preference for social affordable housing or housing for elderly people. The playing field should be retained as open space, as there is very limited open space available in the community north of Wantage Road. St Nicholas is one of the main schools for infants in Wallingford and teaches 170 pupils in reception, year one, year two, and year three. From September, it plans to extend this provision to pupils up to year six, providing a full infant and primary school in education. Head teacher of St Nicholas, Amy King, previously said the plan for the new school has been in development for a long time, and so it's really exciting to see it start to take shape and to have so much involvement in planning what it will offer the children.
Visitors enjoy Biscuit Day. Didcot Railway Centre visitors have been celebrating National Biscuit Day. Friday was the National Day of Celebration, and there were lots of events at the Steam Heritage Centre to mark the occasion. The celebration included engine number 4079, Pendennis Castle, carrying a replica headboard from the 1920s, which was linked to an excursion to Huntley and Palmer's famous biscuit factory at Reading. There was also a display of Huntley and Palmer's biscuit tins provided by Reading Museum. Bohemia Aslin and Lilia Bishgrukot from the museum wore vintage costumes as workers at the factory and gave talks about the history of the company. Founded in the 1820s in Reading, the town became famous for biscuit manufacturing until this ceased in 1976. Visitors followed a biscuit trail around the railway centre and were given train rides behind Pendennis Castle. Frank Dumbleton, a volunteer at the rail centre, took photos of the activities. He said in the 1920s and 1930s, the Great Western Railway used to run educational excursions to businesses such as Fry's Chocolate Factory at Summerdale near Bristol, the Pinewood Film Studios near Slough, and the Ford Motor Company at Dagenham. And there's a photograph here of the two ladies in question standing by an engine with a sign on it saying, "Excursion to Huntley and Palmer's, Reading." They are both wearing vintage costumes and they look as though they're about to tuck into and enjoy a couple of digestive biscuits.
Vehicle Rally shares £28,000 with good causes. The Wallingford Vehicle Rally and Parade shared out £28,000 to charities, community groups and local organisations. The money was distributed at a recent cheque presentation evening to groups including Seesaw, Corner Men, Thames Valley Air Ambulance and Lowland Rescue, local organisations such as the Scouts, Cholsey Volunteers, Wallingford Volunteer Drivers, as well as various parent-teacher associations also received funds. The event organisers expressed gratitude to all the participants, volunteers and attendees for their enthusiasm and generosity. Each vehicle entered, hour volunteered and penny raised contributed to the success of the 2026 rally and its community impact. Special thanks were extended to sponsors Haynes Car Care Centre, Bright Tune, James Gesner Estate Agents, Wayland's Group, Wearer Tools, WD-40, Petrol Performance at Dodo Mat, CVP Oxford, ABP, Mat at Mox, Master Floors, Pure Pest, Drain Gain, Albury Printing and Wallingford Radio. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of the committee members holding the cheque, 30 worthy causes, £28,000.
Jailed. Thug who hit victim with a baton. A violent thug has been jailed after hitting a man repeatedly in the head with an extendable baton. Liam Morris of Cooper's Peace, Wallingford, was sentenced at Oxford Crown Court on June the 5th. The 43-year-old was sentenced for two attacks on different victims last year. On March the 1st, he attacked Calum Day, and on July the 23rd, he attacked Gary Buckle. Mr. Morris was sentenced for grievous bodily harm with intent on Mr. Day, as well as being in possession of an offensive weapon, namely a baton. He was sentenced for one count of assault, occasioning actual bodily harm on Mr. Buckle. Morris pleaded guilty to the offences against Mr. Day. He initially denied the offence against Mr. Buckle, but changed his plea on the first day of his trial. Naomi Perry, prosecuting, told the court that Mr. Day had witnessed Morris shouting at some people from the window of his home, accusing them of being drug dealers. Mr. Day confronted him, and Morris came out of his home with the baton. He went to hit Mr. Day, but he managed to disarm him and take the baton. Morris asked for it back, but Mr. Day walked away. Morris followed him, verbally abused him, and punched him in the jaw. The incident continued with Mr. Day ending up throwing the baton on the ground. Morris retrieved it and struck Mr. Day on the head. He fell to the ground and Morris continued to attack him. Mrs. Perry told the court that Mr. Day managed to get away but was vomiting blood. The barrister said he thought he was going to die. It was a nasty incident. In his victim impact statement, Mr. Day said, "My mental health has really been impacted. I used to be outgoing and confident. I'm always looking now over my shoulder." Mrs. Perry told the court that the second victim, Mr. Buckle, was a neighbour of Morris and that they had a long-running dispute. Morris saw Mr. Buckle in Wallingford Town Centre and punched him in the face several times. A member of the public intervened to stop the attack. Lyle Thompson, mitigating, told the court that Morris previously had worked as a chef. He said the only available sentence for the court today is one of the immediate custody. He hasn't been before the courts in 20 years. He has expressed remorse. The court heard Morris express no remorse for the incident with Mr. Buckle due to the long-standing dispute. Mr. Thompson also explained that Morris had been commended for his work in the kitchens in prison. He added, "He intends to stay away from the area where this happened when he is released." Judge Emma Knott KC said, "This offending was characterised by serious violence."
Artists given free creative support. A new scheme is offering Oxfordshire artists free creative space and professional support. The Ignite programme, launched by Cornerstone Arts Centre in Didcot and the Beacon in Wantage, gives artists access to studio and rehearsal spaces, along with mentoring, marketing help, and opportunities to exhibit or perform their work. Designed for creatives working across performing, visual, written, or interdisciplinary arts who live or work in Oxfordshire, the scheme aims to help participants connect, collaborate, and grow their practice. Councillor Georgina Heritage, Cabinet Member for Communities at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "I'm so excited that we're able to introduce this brilliant new initiative. Artists do not always know where to begin when looking for support or opportunities to share their work. Cornerstone can be that welcoming first step, and Ignite is a brilliant way to open up new conversations, build connections, and help creative ideas grow. It welcomes applicants from all artistic backgrounds and disciplines, including those returning to the arts after a break or presenting work for the first time. Selected artists will join a pool able to request up to 50 hours of free studio, rehearsal, or development space across the two venues to be used during off-peak hours over a 12-month period, subject to space and staff availability. Applications are open to anyone aged 18 and above through a short online form with selection handled by a dedicated panel. Priority will be given to artists living or working in South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse, though applications from across Oxfordshire will be considered if space allows. Both centres offer a wide range of creative programmes, from performances and exhibitions to classes and workshops, all designed to support community wellbeing through the arts.
Green space to get Earth Trust shop and cafe. The Earth Trust has revealed that the Oxfordshire Green Space will get a new cafe and shop on the site to serve visitors, walkers, families and school groups. The new cafe will be coming to Whittenham Clumps and as possibly as soon as September of this year, as part of the new Gateway to Nature project. The new visitor hub is set to include a seven-day-a-week cafe serving hot and cold food, as well as drinks and other refreshments. The Gateway to Nature project also includes improved pairing and vehicle access from Sire Hill to the visitor centre, and a new paid access adventure playground experiences for family. It comes as a package of plans designed to improve the welcome starting point to the landscape around Whittenham Clumps, to help people feel confident accessing it. A job advert has revealed the organisation is looking for staff members to join the cafe team, including a manager of the Grab and Go Cafe, which will offer fresh, locally sourced, prepared food and drink. The cafe is expected to serve around 30,000 customers annually as part of their 364-day visitor operation.
Missing man, 31, says he is completely fine. And this is a nice picture of this gentleman in the paper, looking very well. A missing person appeal in Didcot took a dramatic turn after the man at the centre of the search claimed he is not missing and accused police of harassment. Thames Valley Police issued an alert on Saturday night for 31-year-old Thomas, whose surname was not disclosed. He was last reportedly seen at around 5 p.m. on May the 27th. In an appeal issued publicly on Saturday evening, Thames Valley Police described him as 6'4", slim with a beard, short brown hair and brown eyes. Police said he was last seen wearing a black T-shirt with black jogging bottoms or shorts. The appeal said that he may also be using a white Audi and is known to frequent South Oxford Crematorium and Checkenden Woods. However, in a series of comments responding to the appeal, a man identifying himself as Thomas insisted he is safe and has been in contact with family and friends. He wrote, "I am not missing, I am completely fine," and criticised the description released, disputing both his height and clothing, saying that he's 6'3" and fat and wearing black jeans and a navy Hugo Boss T-shirt. He also alleged the situation amounted to a waste of taxpayers' money and claimed police had been harassing at his home address. Later on Sunday afternoon, Thames Valley Police confirmed that Thomas had been found safe and well.
Heritage Railway needs support to keep going. A heritage railway is calling on the community to help secure its future. The Cholsey and Wallingford Railway, which runs the volunteer-led line between the two towns, says public support is vital to keep trains running and preserve a piece of living history for future generations. The railway is a familiar sight in the area, known for its Santa trains, bank holiday rides, and special services during events like Bunkfest. A spokesperson said, "The Cholsey and Wallingford Railway is more than a day out. It is part of the town's story, and with local support, it has an exciting future ahead." The railway relies on members, visitors, and the wider community to maintain operations, including track maintenance, station care, and event support. You do not need to be a railway expert, and you do not have to volunteer to become a member. Many members simply want to help preserve the railway for years to come. Their volunteering opportunities are available. The railway also welcomes people who wish to get more involved with roles in customer service, events, maintenance, gardening, fundraising, and administration. The spokesperson added, "If you enjoy seeing the trains running, have fond memories of visiting, or simply want to support something special in Wallingford, please consider becoming a member."
Broadcaster will leave BBC Radio 2 after 56 years. Oxfordshire broadcaster Bob Harris will step down from hosting his Radio 2 shows, Sounds of the 70s, and Radio 2 Country because of ill health. The radio veteran, who's 80, has prostate cancer, which in April he revealed has spread. Mr. Harris, who lives in Steventon, said leaving his shows had been one of the hardest decisions of his life. The former Old Grey Whistle Test presenter has lived in the village for more than 30 years. He added, "It's incredible to think that my broadcasting career has spanned almost 56 years. I'm fortunate to have spent my entire working life doing something I love so much. I'm a real BBC loyalist and grateful I've always been given the freedom to build my programmes in my own way. Most of my time on air has been spent with the fabulous family at Radio 2, and it's been a joy to broadcast on this world-class radio station. I'm very proud of Radio 2 Country Show has played in such a massive part in propelling country to become the fastest growing music genre in the UK, and presenting Sounds of the 70s on Sunday's afternoons has been a real pleasure and made my time here the most special in my life. But more than anything, I want to say thank you to my listeners. I put everything I have into every show I've ever done, and it's been because of you. Your love and loyalty means more to me than words can ever say. I'm sorry my health issues are forcing me to step down, but I realise I must concentrate on getting myself well again. This has been one of the hardest decisions of my life, but I would never want to be doing programmes knowing that I'm unable to give you 100%. I'm going to miss you all, and I love you very much, and thank you for listening. Helen Thomas, the head of Radio 2, hailed Harris as a true radio legend, and she offered him a sincere thank you. Bob has hosted the Radio 2 Country Show since 1999, becoming a trusted and respected tastemaker as the genre exploded in popularity. Since taking the reins of Sounds of the 70s, he's filled the show with love, laughter and captivating stories of being at the heart of the music scene throughout the decade.
Police race to reports of a man peering into school. A report from villagers of a man peering into an Oxfordshire school has been attended to by the police. Thames Valley Police said that they were told that a man was looking through the windows of a school in Cholsey early on Saturday, May the 30th. The main school in the Oxford village is Cholsey Primary School, and the force confirmed that the premises and outbuildings were all secure. A spokesperson for the Rural Crime Unit said, PCs Dollery and Woolley attended a report of a male looking through the windows of a school in Cholsey during the early hours of this morning. The premises and outbuildings were all secure. Thank you to the local residents for making us aware of the suspicious activity. Pop-up shop for vinyl returns to Arts Centre, and the article is accompanied by a picture of Richard Strange, who has his vinyl records in the pop-up store. Fans of vinyl records gathered at an art centre in Didcot to get their hands on collectible item albums. DJ Richard Strange ran Music Box record store in Wallingford until it closed in 2019 due to tough trading conditions. In recent years, he has been running a pop-up record store at the Cornerstone Art Centre in Didcot to take advantage of the vinyl revival, a growing trend for music fans to choose to buy vinyl records instead of downloading songs. Usually, Mr. Strange runs the pop-up at the Art Centre on the last Saturday of the month, and it was busy with music fans at the weekend. While he no longer has a record shop on the High Street, he retains an extensive collection to sell and play. As well as searching through the crates, customers get the chance to try out being a DJ on the record decks. Before the pop-up, Mr. Strange told customers, "Join us for a laid-back day of music, vinyl and good vibes with Music Box Record Shop pop-up. Browse a great selection of records, discover something new, and if you're feeling brave, bring your favourite vinyl and take a spin on the decks. Riverman Records and Truck Store in Oxford sell vinyl records also."
Cheesemaker proud after winning two Artisan Awards. A popular Oxfordshire creamery has said it is proud of the team's work after winning two Artisan Cheese Prizes at an annual awards. Nettlebed Creamery won the top prizes in two categories at the 10th Annual Artisan Cheese Awards 2026, a series which supports cheesemakers in the UK and Ireland and celebrates their achievements. This year, the awards saw 644 entries from more than 100 micro and medium-sized artisan cheese producers, and a judging panel of 80 representatives from some of the top food retailers and supermarkets. Across 20 classes, from hard to soft cheese, raw milk to blue, smoked and flavoured, Nettlebed Creamery came away with 2 gold awards. The Creamery's Witheridge in Hay 6-month aged cheese was awarded class winners in the organic cheese class, while its Bix cheese won highly commended in the soft cheese class. Nettlebed Creamery's executive cheesemaker, Sabrina Langley, said, "It's always really lovely to get recognition for our cheese. We work really hard to make the cheese we do. We've got a great team at the moment who work together really well, and it can be hard work. It's hot and tiring and quite a physical job, so when you get awards coming through, it makes it all worthwhile. It is also really nice for a small business to be recognised in this way. We're very proud of what we do." She added that the care put into every aspect of their cheese production, from using organic milk from local herds, which shines through in the project, to the time it takes to perfect a new cheese, is a key part of their approach. Along with its cheeses, Nettlebed Creamery is beloved for the Cheese Shed Cafe, a delightfully rustic barn which specialises in cheese toasties. And there's a little photograph of Sabrina Langley wearing her blue and white cheesemaker's uniform, and she's working on the cheeses.
Riverside Mansion has a price cut by over £6 million. A Riverside Oxfordshire manor built for a princess had a price drop of £6 million after months on the market. Newington House in Newington near Wallingford was put on sale by Savills last September for £16 million. In April, it had the price slashed to £14.25 million, and now it's listed at £9.95 million. However, this is in part because the manor house and the coach house, which are part of the overall estate, are now being listed as separate lots when they weren't before. The main Newington mansion was originally built in the 17th century when an English aristocrat married an Italian princess who was a member of the noble Pagliavinci family. She became homesick and had he built the mansion for her as a gift in the Italianate style of the palace in Genoa where she grew up. Since then, it's gone through several renovations, although many elements of the Grade II listed structure still remain. Some of its most recent history occurred in the 20th century when the American artist and hostess Ethel Sands bought the property and used it as a gathering place for many famous literary figures. Henry James, Arnold Bennett and Virginia Woolf were all known to have stayed there. In recent times, the 42-acre site became a wedding venue and also being available for other events. Its listing states, "Today in the 21st century, the house is filled with everyday sounds of busy family life, and the original features like the open fires and the wooden shutters are still in daily use. The property has been fitted with a modern biomass boiler which continues to benefit from government tariffs. The whole estate offers several options for ancillary and or rental accommodation. But whatever the use or occupation, the heritage and impression of grandeur at Newington is undiminished. A freehold property, it has 10 bedrooms and 5 bathrooms, as well as landscape gardens, a swimming pool, a tennis court, a croquet lawn and a greenhouse. In addition, it boasts a gym, reception room, gun room, wine storage and games room with a full-size snooker table which was thought to have been previously owned by Winston Churchill. The River Tame runs through the west of the estate with an island in the middle of it, and there's a woodland filled with wildlife. The listing describes the whole property as an elegant country house in unspoiled Oxfordshire, centred on a restored 17th century palazzo and set within 42 acres of gardens, meadows and water, including the River Tame running through.
Village Farm Shop, delighted by Wynne. Owners of a farm shop in an Oxfordshire village said that they are delighted by their win of a prestigious regional award after serving the community for more than 18 years. Britwell's Alone Farm Shop at Red Lion Farm in the South Oxfordshire countryside near Watlington has been named Local Food and Drink Champions for the South East in the Countryside Alliance Awards 2026. Julia Manns, co-owner of the popular farm shop, said they are delighted by the recognition. "We are very thankful and amazed that our small farm shop is doing so well. We appreciate that so many people took the time to vote for us, as it is based on nominations for the shortlist and then public voting. Our customers and the village are delighted for us and frequently tell us, which is lovely. The next stage is the national final against regional winners from the rest of the country, and we will find out how we did at a reception in the House of Lords in July." Although they were named runners-up in the Muddy Stilettos Award for Best Farm Shop in Bucks, Barks and Oxfordshire last year, it's the farm shop's first award nomination, let alone win, for the Countryside Alliance. The annual award series has been running for 19 years to highlight the achievement of rural businesses, which names a winner and a highly commended runner-up across the categories of butcher, local food and drink, pub, rural enterprise and village shop with post office. Mrs. Mann said her family, including herself, her husband and their three children, set up at Red Lion Farm in 1993 and took over the chilled unit in the barn when it became vacant in 2008 to begin selling the farm's meat, including pork, beef, lamb, directly to customers from field to fork. Britwell Salom Farm also stocks a large selection of other locally produced food.
Hospitals face disruption with staff set to strike. Oxford University Hospitals, in brackets OUH, have urged people in Oxfordshire to choose services appropriately ahead of upcoming strikes. Resident doctors, formerly known as junior doctors, are set to take industrial action from 7 a.m. on Monday, June the 15th, to 6:59 a.m. on Friday, June the 19th. The strikes are expected to cause mass disruption in hospitals across the UK, and patients are urged to access medical care only when needed. The strikes, following on from industrial action in April, form part of an ongoing dispute between resident doctors and the government. Despite receiving pay rises worth 33% over the past 4 years, the union argues that doctors are still being paid a fifth less than they were in 2008, once inflation is taken into account. Additionally, the strikes form a call to action over the lack of training posts available for new medical graduates. The government uses the Consumer Price Index measure of inflation to calculate public sector pay increases. However, the BMA says many resident doctors have large student loans and that interest on these is calculated using a different inflation measure called RPI, which is higher. Resident doctors make up nearly half of all doctors in England and work across the NHS, including in A&E and GP surgeries. They used to be known as junior doctors, but in September 2024, the government agreed to change the name of their role to better reflect their expertise. In a statement, OUH said, "Although we will continue to provide urgent and emergency care wherever possible, we will have to reschedule some appointments and elective planned inpatient and day case procedures across our four hospitals in Oxford and Banbury to ensure we keep our patients who are currently in hospital safe. Disruption is expected to impact patient appointments and waiting times, including days before and after strike action. Felicity Taylor-Drew, Chief Operating Officer at OUH, said, "As always, our top priority during this planned industrial action is ensuring patient safety while maintaining the highest standard of care. We are committed to keeping disruption to a minimum, and we have measures in place to ensure the safety and welfare of our patients and our staff. However, with industrial action reducing the number of resident doctors we have working in our hospitals, there will inevitably be a knock-on effect. Patients may experience longer waiting times, particularly in our two emergency departments at the John Radcliffe and Horton General Hospitals. We will prioritise patients who are in genuine need of emergency care. It is important that patients requiring urgent medical care continue to seek help as usual, especially in emergencies and life-threatening situations." And there is a photograph here of junior doctors on the picket line at the John Radcliffe Hospital on Tuesday, April 11th, 2023.
Boris Johnson wins a fight to cut down a tree. Boris Johnson has won permission to cut down a tree at his 3.8 million pound Oxfordshire manor after arguing that the leaves were clogging his swimming pool. The former Prime Minister and his wife had asked South Oxfordshire District Council for consent to remove a willow and two ash trees from the garden. Their Grade 2 listed moated property, Brightwell Manor, and was bought in 2023 as a substantial family base away from London. Mr Johnson has roots in the county, having previously served as Conservative MP from Henley from 2001 to 2008, before going on to be Mayor of London and later entering Downing Street. Planning documents show photographs of the outdoor pool with the willow only a few metres away, close to the barbecue and seating area used for family gatherings. Councillors have now... Boris Johnson wins a fight to cut down a tree. Boris Johnson has won permission to cut down a tree at his 3.8 million pound Oxfordshire manor after arguing that the leaves were clogging his swimming pool. The former Prime Minister and his wife had asked South Oxfordshire District Council for consent to remove a willow and two ash trees from the garden. Their Grade 2 listed moated property, Brightwell Manor, and was bought in 2023 as a substantial family base away from London. Mr Johnson has roots in the county, having previously served as Conservative MP from Henley from 2001 to 2008, before going on to be Mayor of London and later entering Downing Street. Planning documents show photographs of the outdoor pool with the willow only a few metres away, close to the barbecue and seating area used for family gatherings. Councillors have now signed off on the application following a consultation allowing the felling work to proceed. In his written case to the authority, Mr Johnson said the willow should be removed because falling leaves keep filling up the pool and filter, causing damage, and added they hope to replace it with a new shed. Plans also cover the two ash trees and a smaller ash suffering from dieback, and a larger multi-stem tree described as being too big for the location and shading the new patio area. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of Boris and his wife standing outside number 10 Downing Street, clapping their hands.
On this day, 1983, Margaret Thatcher won her second term as Prime Minister. Last year, the UK sanctioned two Israeli government ministers for inciting violence and abuses of the Palestinian human rights, UK Foreign Secretary David Lammy said. Birthdays. Rich Hall, comedian, 72. Mark Anthony Turnage, composer, 66. Gina Gershon, actress, 64. Jan Triplehorn, actress, 63. Elizabeth Hurley, actress, 61. David Platt, former footballer and manager, 60. In history, 1190. Holy Roman Emperor Frederick I drowned in a river on his way to the Holy Land on the Third Crusade. 1829. The first Oxford and Cambridge boat race took place 2 miles from Hambledon Lock to Henley Bridge. It was won easily by Oxford. 1864. Overarm bowling was legalised for cricket matches. 1909. The SOS signal was first used in an emergency. The call, which replaced CQD code in 1906, was recognised by 2 steamers who went to the aid of the Cunard liner SS Slavonia, wrecked off the Azores. 1922. Actress and singer Judy Garland, A Star is Born, The Wizard of Oz, was born at Grand Rapids in Minnesota. 1989. Britain's last lightship was towed from its position northwest of Guernsey to Harwich, ending an era of 157 years for the vessels.
Harking back. When trips to the local chippy were a cheap treat on a Friday, remembering the days when fish and chips were served in newspaper and always cooked in beef dripping. When I lived abroad for a while, there were many aspects of the UK that I missed. There were obvious things, such as having old buildings with a history dating back more than 200 years, looking forward to 4 distinct seasons each year rather than constant heat, and taking a country walk surrounded by wildlife less likely to kill me. But it was the simple pleasures that got me longing for home, not least eating fish and chips on the beach without sustaining severe sunburn. Yes, they still did eat fish and chips in Australia, but the fish was snapper and the chips were mostly frozen versions cooked in oil with a flavour I didn't like. So one of the first things I did upon my return home, despite it being a freezing cold January, was to go to the seaside and celebrate with a parcel of crispy battered cod and chunky, randomly shaped golden chips with a liberal shaking of salt. I forewent the optional extra of vinegar and chose to cast aside the wooden chip fork provided, instead using my fingers as I would have done in my youth. Not that fish and chips haven't changed over the years, mind you, from the way they are packaged to the oils in which they are cooked. Also gone are the days when it made for a cheap tea, with the price skyrocketing, along with so many of life's adorable treats. Fish and chips, which some still considered to be the UK's national dish, originated in this country in the mid-19th century. Such was its value as a reasonably priced, nutritious meal, the British government safeguarded the supply of fish and chips during both the First and Second World Wars, and it escaped the rationing applied to so many popular foods. The irony is that the British tradition of eating fish battered and fried in oil was actually thought to have been introduced to the country by Spanish and Portuguese migrants. We can, however, lay claim to the idea of pairing the fish with a cheap filling staple of chipped potatoes. My mum recalls fish and chips when she was growing up in the 1940s. She said when we went to see our nana on a Saturday night, we would go up the chippy and get chips for us kids. Then we'd eat them at her house. It was a treat we really looked forward to. The chip shop was owned by a grumpy old man who we called Mr. Fishy, and I was a bit afraid of him. But we were brave enough to ask him for scraps, the small crispy pieces of batter left in the fryer after the fish had been taken out. Mum also remembers the great excitement when a fish shop opened her home village. She added it was behind the post office. They had a sort of kitchen with a window where you placed the order, and then they slammed the window shut. You had to wait in an old lean-to. I always remember being put off because there was a spider floating in the vinegar. My own earliest encounter with fish and chips was at the seaside during a family holiday in the 1970s. I could just about reach the counter where the salt and vinegar were kept. I recall it being unbearably hot in the chip shop and consequently feeling very sorry for the people who worked there. I watched intently as the hot chips were shoveled into a waiting sheet of old newspaper before the cod was popped on top and the parcel tightly wrapped. Nowadays, fish and chips are more hygienically packaged in plain paper, with many being served in cardboard boxes or polystyrene trays instead. In the 70s, we would eat our purchases straight out of newspaper on the harbour wall, trying not to let the grease soak through the paper onto our clothing. As wildlife lovers, we kids also enjoyed sharing the odd chip or two with the gulls. And there is a black and white photograph here of three people working in a chip shop, two gentlemen and a lady.
Best breakfasts. Don Fulcher enjoys a selection of cereals for breakfast. More readers have been sharing their thoughts and memories of what a good breakfast concerns, including Sylvia Crompton, age 82, who said, "Every day, my breakfast bowl consists of one handful of bran, one handful of shreddies, one of chocolate cereal, and two handfuls of cornflakes. Drizzled with honey, 10 sultanas, 10 blueberries, and drown it all with lots of cold milk." Gordon Davis told me, "From the first day I went to school, my mother gave me a breakfast of cornflakes, followed by egg, bacon, and fried bread. And I can distinctly remember her pouring the fat, or the liquor as she called it, over it as she emptied the frying pan. Going all day," she said. "There was no such thing as cholesterol in those days. I never went to school, work or otherwise, without the same breakfast until I was 73. I'm 84 next month, so my mum's proper breakfast hasn't done me any harm." Finally, Douglas Fulcher, who sent in the reader picture, said, "My breakfast is Scottish organic porridge with milk and a touch of honey. I've always said that breakfast is the best and most important meal of the day, and there is a big picture of lots of things that you can buy in Lidl and Waitrose and other supermarkets."
This news item is from the Daily Oxford website. Wallingford Hospital Ghana renovation gets £800 boost. Wallingford Hospital successfully raised nearly £800 for its garden renovation project through a community bloom and bake sale held on Thursday, May the 7th, 2026. The event, organised by the admin team at Wallingford Hospital, brought together local residents, staff, patients and businesses in support of transforming the hospital's long-running garden into a safe, accessible space. The sale featured an extensive selection of plants, alongside numerous cakes and homemade items, with many contributions coming from local companies in the Wallingford area. Every item sold directly contributed to the £800 total raised towards the garden renovation efforts. The garden at Wallingford Hospital has served as a peaceful haven for patients, staff, visitors since the hospital opened in the late 1960s. For nearly six decades, this outdoor space has provided a tranquil environment where patients recovering from treatments, hospital staff taking breaks, and visitors meeting with loved ones could enjoy fresh air and greenery.
This is from the Oxford Mail website. Waitrose takes £20 million hit with mass price cuts on products. Waitrose has taken a £20 million hit with mass price cuts on popular products in an attempt to win back shoppers. The UK supermarket giant has 9 stores across Oxfordshire, including 2 in Oxford, as well as shops in Abingdon, Banbury, Henley, Tame, Wallingford, Wantage and Whitney. According to the Financial Times, Waitrose is reducing the prices of around 160 everyday own brand items. This includes staples such as fruit, vegetables and meat, with cuts averaging about 12%. The move is aimed at attracting more affluent customers who have drifted towards rivals Marks and Spencer and Ocado in recent years, the Financial Times reported. This new round of reductions takes the total Waitrose has spent on price cuts to about £140 million since 2023, but the chain has still found it difficult to grow its market share. Its grocery share is understood to be about 3.8%, while M&S food sales have risen by nearly 12% over the past year, lifting that rival to roughly 4.1% of the UK market.
The Walled Gardens of Wallingford 2026 takes place on next Sunday, 14th of June, from 1 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. 17 privately walled gardens will open to the public, including three gardens not shown previously. And all the proceeds from the event will go to local charities. Food and refreshments will be available in some gardens, and entertainment, you look out for the Morris dancers and touring the gardens, and optional short river trips. This is now in its third year. The annual event has proved hugely popular with locals and tourists alike, and last year saw more than 1,200 people attending. If you read to rest your feet, there's an opportunity to enjoy a glass of wine and strawberries or a trip on the boat. And last year, £16,000 was raised for good causes in the town. And this year, proceeds will be split between 10 local charities. What you must be careful is that the cost of the tickets are £10, and they are advance purchase only. And you can buy them from the Corn Exchange, KP Stationers or Route 1 Garden Centre, and it's cash only. Advance purchase only, no tickets will be sold on the day of the event. We hope you go there and we enjoy it. Thank you.
Another regular item from the Bridge. Beyond the Fridge, this month entitled A Land of Milk and Honey. We are just back from a short but exhausting and enjoyable break in Somerset, during which we travelled on the West Somerset Steam Railway, paid a long-awaited visit to the beautiful Grade 1 listed garden created by Marjorie Fish and her husband at East Lambrook Manor, and had the pleasure of enjoying a lunchtime concert in Wells Cathedral during their music festival. The journey took us a couple of hours, but we could have been in a different country, that of the rural 1950s, when agriculture thrived and food was wholesome and locally grown. Every route on which we travelled seemed to pass farms with well-cared-for dairy cows. Dairy cattle? Who remembers those? Or little stands at the sides of the street, groaning with homemade jams and pickles, with eggs laid by local chickens, or honey from local bees. In the Cheddar area, there were many farm shops at the roadside, laden with vegetables and beautiful ripe Somerset strawberries. Pubs and restaurants seemed to take a pride in serving not only local food, but of course also the many forms of Somerset cider. As we travelled across the flatlands of the Somerset Levels towards Glastonbury, I remembered the derivation of the place name Avalon, which is thought to have a Gaulish Celtic root in the word abalo, meaning apple or apple tree. The Isle of Avalon, the Apple Isle or Fortune Isle, said to be located here, was where Arthur went to heal his grievous wound. In early times, the local landscape consisted of many small islands in the midst of rivers and lakes. We found ourselves one sunny day near lunchtime on the levels and looking for refreshment. A roadside sign directed us along a dirt track past ramshackle farm buildings held together with binder twine to a courtyard In an adjacent barn, we were able to taste a variety of local ciders and sampled an apple cider vinegar before being seated at a ramshackle table where a ploughman's of gigantic proportions was produced. We were treated to slices of local ham, homemade pickles, ample salad, what seemed like a very large chunk of real cheddar cheese, and its twin Stilton portion, together with homemade pickled eggs, accompanied by chunks of fresh brown bread. I have survived, but my waistline has not. And it wasn't helped by the venison and cranberry sausage rolls from Wells Market either. I'm not sure I've ever had a pickled egg before, but I'm going to try making some. And that was written by Jane May.
And finally, Thames Path 30th Anniversary Relay starts at Source. A walking relay to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Thames Path is underway after it kicked off at its source of the iconic waterway. Over 24 days this month, hundreds of ramblers, community and river user groups will trek along the route, finishing in Woolwich on the 28th of June. The 185-mile, 298 kilometres path, beginning at the river's source near Kemble in Gloucestershire, follows the waterway through seven counties, including Oxfordshire and Berkshire, before heading into the capital. Kicking off the trek on Friday, Claire Jarrett from National Trails explained that each of the 24 walks would be led by experienced community groups. It's going to be a celebration of each different community and what they bring to the trail, she said. The relay is part of a range of events planned to mark the anniversary of the path, which runs alongside the river until just past London's Thames Barrier. The path first opened in 1996 and is the only national trails route to follow a river from its source to the sea. Claire Jarrett, who is the Thames Path Engagement Officer at National Trails, explained that funding for the trail and its upkeep was always difficult. We beg, borrow and steal from what we can to really, and a lot of it is done by those volunteer hours, she said. We are very lucky that we have such a good group of dedicated people.
That's the end of this week's recording of the Talking Newspaper. We'll be back again next week with a different reading team. But until then, from all of us, it's goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.